And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every single episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, low on food and fuel, the Ghost crew agrees to steal an Imperial weapon shipment for a crime lord Visago. During the mission, they encounter a familiar droid duo and find that the weapons in question are more deadly than they realize. We're talking droids in distress this week. It's the opening 30 seconds and I already don't know how to talk. How you doing?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
It's so weird talking to you in the middle of the day. Like, I can look out my window and not see darkness.
I know. We're probably going to be really perky. I also my shoulders and back were kind of hurting today, so I took my caffeine and aspirin pill combination.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be wide awake.
Yeah, because I just got back from fighting the grocery store.
Ooh.
And I gotta, we're recording a little early because for us it's tomorrow's Christmas Eve, so we usually record on Mondays, but tomorrow's Christmas Eve, so I'm recording a little bit early. So happy belated Christmas, everybody! But yeah, I had a good morning. I've been trying to catch up on my friend's podcast. My friend Jess is part of a podcast called Roll to Fail. It's a D&D podcast, and it's a hell of a lot of fun. I really just enjoy it so far. And, I haven't gotten to where Jess comes in yet. They come in like episode 7-ish and I'm on episode 5. So I'm almost to them, but I'll be there soon. And then I can text them and be like, Jess, I love it all. And Jess has been writing me back and they're just like, I'm glad you love it. Yay. So.
See, what we do to avoid the supermarket glut here, because, boy, it can get, our supermarkets here can get crazy, especially, like, this time of year. So what Scott McGregor and I do is we go at, like, midnight when there's stock in the shelves, or sometimes you're even lucky and they're not even stock in the shelves, and you can just, like, walk through it in peace.
Yeah.
With the other night owls.
That used to be me when I used to be a closer in my store, but now I'm,
right,
like, forced to go at, like, 5 in the afternoon. Or
right.
And I would have gone earlier today, but I was finishing this outline for this podcast. But so I just put on a little bit of a Roll to Fail podcast. Go check it out, guys. It's a great podcast. They're new. They're not very far into it. They're, like, 15 episodes in or something. So go check out Roll to Fail podcast, guys.
It's like one little binge, and then you're caught up.
Yeah, I've been mostly listening at work, and it's about an hour long an episode, so and they're all great. There's a character named Sonny, and I love Sonny. He is amazing. He is like the cute dumb one, and he's just, everything he says is hilarious. And there's a little rat man named Coors, and he's the tough guy, and I just love everything about it. And so I'm glad I did it. So go listen to Roll to Fail, guys. They're a lot of fun. Anyway, our podcast. I feel like I just talked to you last night.
Yeah, how about that?
You know, though, I liked this episode better than I remembered it.
Me too. Not that, yeah, I didn't like it when I first saw it, but I'm telling you, our added perspective on this,
yeah,
puts a whole new level to watching it.
I don't remember if I said this in the beginning. We're talking droids in distress this week because I was messing up how I was talking. But yeah, like there's, looking back on it, there's so many subtle things that I missed the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's way better than I thought it was.
Yeah, because you didn't know what to be watching out for. You know, you see things in this one because you know what this time through, because you know what's happening in the future, and you go, oh, and like this is only the second episode in, and I'm going, man, these, you know, the writing team on this really had this thought out, you know, a lot more than, because I remember like when we were still doing Clone Wars and this was coming out, so they were sort of overlapping, and we were doing what we do with Resistance now, where we still talk about it on the show, but like cryptically and stuff, and like, mm-hmm. Oh, Rebels is happening, and we want to talk about it because it's fresh. And we were saying, oh, yeah, this is going just like Clone Wars with Filoni, where they develop it and they're sort of working it as they go through. And mm-hmm. It gets more complicated as it goes through, and it starts out, you think it might be kind of fluffy, but blah, blah, blah. And it sort of seemed more like a work in progress, which it probably was, but now that I'm seeing this early stuff, I think they definitely learned from Clone Wars and came into this one with, like, here's our in, here's our out, here's where we want roughly everybody going, and what's going to happen to them. Which I think they have to do maybe more because there's more movies coming out. So they have to do, you know, Clone Wars, they could sort of work in that little middle area, and that was their set guidelines. This one, you can't go too far off the rails because of the new stuff coming out. So it's interesting. I'm on caffeine.
That's totally fine. I'm on lack of eating because we're going to go to my favorite ramen place before we go. Me and my stepmom have a movie date tonight, so I'm going to take her to my favorite ramen place. And so I was like, don't eat all day so I can gorge myself on ramen.
I have a steak in the fridge. I'm having a steak and broccoli and cottage cheese for an early dinner today. So I've only snacked so far, so I'm a little food deprived and caffeine.
Yeah, I had a biscuit this morning and a protein bar, and then I plan to eat like my weight in ramen.
We sound like future people. I had my nutrition biscuit and my protein bar.
And my ration bar.
Yes.
And
it was my liquid shake.
Well, I'm ready to get into this, are you?
Yes.
Let's do this. Droids in Distress is the second episode of Star Wars Rebels. Yes, I'm not following their official numbering because it's stupid.
Ours is better.
Ours is better. This is better.
Follow our numbers.
It's the second episode of Star Wars Rebels. It was released October 13th, 2014. It was written by Greg Wiseman and directed by Stuart Lee. Some extra information for you. Phil Lamar reprises his role as Bail Organa from The Clone Wars. He was also the voice of Kit Fisto in The Clone Wars. Anthony Daniels reprises his role as C-3PO. Paul Reubens voices the shuttle driver droid RX-24. His other credits include Pee-wee Herman, which he's most known for, but he was also the droid Rex in the Star Tours ride, which is what his character and the shuttle are roughly based on.
Hello!
I cannot do a Pee-wee Herman voice. Kath Soucie voices Minister Maketh Tua. Her other credits include Mon Mothma in The Clone Wars, but I will note now, she does not voice Mon Mothma in Rebels. And she also is the voice of Phil and Lil DeVille in Rugrats and in Futurama. And she has a slew of other animated shows under her belt. I forgot to mention this last week, but the crime lord Cicatro Visago is voiced by, I'm so sorry, I'm literally about to butcher your name, Keith
Sarabashka. With that.
Okay. His other works include Son of Anarchy, The Equalizer, Law and Order, and Transformers. When R2-D2 and 3PO are told to go to the back of the bus, there is another droid lurking back there with them. It is a Lothal protocol droid, and it was based roughly on early Ralph McQuarrie sketches of C-3PO.
Yep, full production paintings, and those paintings were based on the robot character from the, old silent movie Metropolis. So it's like, yeah, so it's like third generation. Having that guy lurking around was like a tribute all the way back through all of science fiction. It was great.
Yeah.
And now I gotta scratch that out of my notes now, because we
I'm
just
sorry.
covered that.
You can still mention it.
When I was writing it down in my notes, I'm like, oh my God, there's no way that they didn't mention this in any extra material, because yeah, they always mention these references. So I knew it was coming. I knew
Yeah.
it. I wrote it down just in case they missed it, but
In the absence of Verinda Price, the Imperial Governor of Lothal, who we know from the Thrawn books, spent a lot of her time in these early seasons on Coruscant, Minister Mekkheth Tua was tasked with overseeing Lothal's industries, making sure they all operate at peak efficiency for the Empire. Tua used to work under the previous governor, Ryder Azadi. She is a prime example of Imperial propaganda being raised to believe in helping people through the Empire. And there was actually a side story where she actually did help people on Lothal using the Empire. One of her initial actions as minister was bringing new government-sponsored housing to Lothal. These homes were reasonably affordable and helped the growing population. The shuttle goes to the planet Garel. Galactically speaking, the planet Garel is quote-unquote next door to Lothal. They are separated by a few minutes' worth of hyperspace journey. The star commuter route connecting the two worlds is a commonly traveled one for citizens on both planets. And finally, the final shot of Bail Organa inserting the data card into R2-D2 is purposely framed in a way to mirror the shot of Princess Leia inserting a card into R2-D2 in A New Hope.
So hot.
Inserting! Hi, Yoda!
Get that message out. Yoda has a message for you to deliver.
So, because we're recording two episodes this week, your question, Yoda, comes from me this week. You ready? My question for you is, pussy or bitches? Meaning, do you like cats or dogs more?
Oh.
Pussy or bitches?
Yoda gets along better with cats. But Yoda has dog saddle.
You ride dogs?
Yes. Much fun.
I thought from the Tartakovsky Clone Wars we know that you have a battle goat.
Battle goat good too, but loud noises make battle goat fall over.
Do you like him best because he's horny? Thank you for laughing. That was a terrible joke.
That joke was like shooting fish in barrel.
It really was. I didn't even try.
Yes, Yoda likes doggo saddle.
But you say you like cats better, so why do you like cats over dogs?
Smarter.
Cleaner.
More independent.
But dogs are loyal.
Okay. Yoda not a big fan of loyalty. Yoda likes
Really?
independence. Yes. Mind of one's own.
Go, Anakin. Be independent and kill everything. Yes!
Yoda tells people what to do. No one listens anyway, right?
Right.
Cat. Luke Skywalker, same thing as cat.
That's true, because Yoda was like, don't save your friends, and Luke's just like, fuck that, bye!
Anakin, let mommy die. Get over it. He doesn't listen.
All right, well, thank
Nobody
you,
listens to
Yoda.
Yoda.
I listen to you, Yoda. Okay, bye.
There he goes.
Well, if you want to send a question to Yoda, there's a couple ways of doing that. You can either send me an email at hope@twotruefreaks.com, or you can just leave a comment on this episode, and on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. So.
Whoa, there goes Yoda riding off on his dog saddle.
Bye, Yoda! It's not gonna last 12 hours.
No, that guy's a weirdo, man.
Well, you're ready?
Yes, I am ready.
This one, I wasn't quite sure where to cut the act, so there might be a couple weird cuts. So.
Oh, really? I was like, oh, this one's easy, so I'll see if we line up.
I almost felt like there was four acts, like four little acts opposed to three, so act two is kind of long. So.
I got three acts out of it also, so.
Okay. All right, act one. We open with the Ghost crew flying for their lives away from the new Imperial TIE fighters. Luckily, they managed to jump to hyperspace. But they're low on money and fuel and everything, and they didn't get their shipment from the last job. But apparently, their arms dealer crime lord friend Visato has already offered Kanan a job. And they really don't have any other options at this point, so they head for the Lothal spaceport. At the port, Sabine, Zed, Chopper, and Ezra all board the shuttle acting like different passengers. And then walks on Minister Tua, my babe, my precious girl, my baby girl, and I love her. And she's leading an Aquilish man named Mr. Wabo onto the shuttle, and it's clear that these two are the rebels' targets. Mr. Wabo sits down with her, but she doesn't understand his language, and she calls for a translator, and in walks in C-3PO and R2-D2, who we all know is the real hero of Star Wars. And Kanan hops in right before the door closes, and they're off into hyperspace to the planet Gorel! As Chopper is playing the part of super annoying droid by poking Ezra over and over again in the background, Minister Tua continues her talk with Mr. Wabo. But before they can get further, Chopper shocks Ezra and they cause a scene and Kanan gets into it. And Kanan's like, hey driver, aren't the droids supposed to be in the back of the shuttle? And the Pee-wee's big pilot adventure droid is like, yes, all droids to the back of the bus, yeah! I told you I can't do a Pee Wee Herman impression. I don't even know why I tried. And Ezra's like, well, that's not fair. Ugh, if my droid has to go into the back, that shiny, dumb, big, golden droid bot has to go in the back, too. And his heroic little friend, the real hero, I guess has to go with him as well. And Minister Tua is like, they're with me, and I'm on Imperial missions. And Pee-wee Driver is like, well, this is Imperial regulation. They have to go to the back.
And then he flips down his sunglasses just in that, like, sort of way.
It's great. And Tua has no choice not wanting to get her mission spoiled. And as the droids are shuttling to the back, R2 chirps something to C-3PO, and 3PO goes, secret mission? What secret mission? And they go into the back. With the droids out of the way, Mr. Wabo tries to talk to Tua, but she doesn't understand him. And sitting right behind him, Zeb is like, excuse me, I couldn't help but overhear your predicament. My young friend here, points at Sabine, is fluent in his language. And Sabine is like, oh gee whiz, me? Oh no, I'm just a dainty little girl. Though I could practice for my Imperial exams at the Imperial Academy. And Tua is like, oh my gosh, I love smart girls. I would have totally funded a stem cell program for ladies because I actually want to help people, but the Empire's all like, build more weapons. Ma'am, can you help me? And now that Sabine is wrangled in just like they planned, Tua asks Sabine to find out where the shipment is being held. And Sabine translates Bay 17 just as the shuttle is arriving at Gorel. What'd you think of Act 1, Chris?
I liked it because it started out with the crew, instead of just like a regular like shoot 'em up sort of thing. Well, it did start out with this regular sort of shoot 'em up sort of, but the original story, they're running a grift. You know, they're all coming in character. I love those sort of stories. You know, like the Sting or something. So, And you know, and the way they play it out, you know, you figure out after a couple seconds of what's going on, it's like, oh, they're all, you know. They're running something here because they're all pretending to be someone else. I love just getting love thrown in like that.
I just like Sabine. It's like the tough pump girl, and she's all like, oh, gee whiz, my exams at the academy. I couldn't. Mm-hmm. And I was just laughing. I was like, oh, Sabine.
So a lot of my notes we've already covered, like the McQuarrie 3PO and stuff. But my first thought was like, if 3PO's there as a translator, why is R2 even there? But then, like, I find out later on why he's there on a secret mission.
Yeah.
One thing I've been noticing with Rebels as opposed to Clone Wars is, you know, every week it seemed like I could almost plug a color scheme onto Clone Wars. And I was looking at this going, you know, this doesn't have as much of a color scheme, you know, like a dominant color in an episode like Clone Wars did. It mm-hmm. has more of almost, it's a very Disney sort of color palette, which is very bright and like has bright colors through it like toys, but it's very like artistically balanced and stuff. And I was thinking that as they were all sitting around in this one shot on the Ghost, and everybody's costumes have these like different like bright colored almost pastel highlights on them, and it looked like a bunch of kids' toys, you know, sitting in a thing, and it had a very Disney look to it. And then 2 seconds later, boom, everything's like purple and dark blue, deep purple. So there was a little color scheme going on it, but it's just got a whole different vibe to it than Clone Wars did, which I think is a good thing, you know, it separates it from it.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much all I have to say about part one. I really liked it. Even though, you know, like the introduction of R2 and 3PO was kind of like, remember how last episode you were talking about how parts of it were very pilot-y? This is the very like, oh, look, here come our guest stars entrance. You know, it's very, R2-D2, you know, it's like, hey, look who's here, you know.
Yeah.
But that's just a sort of minor quibble.
I have a sort of note about that in Act 3, because that used to be a problem for me, but now that I know like the context of all the rest of Rebels, it's not a problem
right.
for me anymore. But I'll get to that in Act 3, so.
I think I know where you're going. I think I know where you're going with that. Think I have notes to similar.
Well, my first note was when I heard the name Mr. Wabo, my brain automatically jumped to the comedian Pablo Francisco's Webo Splash commercial bit. Have you ever heard that?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So Pablo Francisco has this bit about how he used to like have a roommate that was a Chippendales dancer and how he would shave his Wabos. And so he was like, and like, do they have an aftershave for that? It'd be called like Webo Splash, and the commercial would be like, but to go, oh, good job, Chip. Oh, thanks, man. But it's really hard being a male dancer, especially when you gotta shave your Webos. That's why I use Webo Splash. Webo Splash is sexy, motherfucker.
Now in dip.
And that's like the first thing I heard Mr. Wabo, and my brain just went, Webo Splash is sexy, motherfucker.
So immediately you think of somebody shaving their balls.
Yeah, so, and he kind of has balls on his face, on his mouth.
Yeah, classy podcast, guys, for those who are new.
We are the classiest, quote-unquote, podcast in the galaxy, so. So, yeah, that was I just kept seeing the Webo Splash commercial every time I heard them say
well,
that.
Well, we're just notching them in. We started them out with pussy or bitches, and now we do have the shaved huevos rancheros.
My next note is in all caps, and it's just, C-3PO.
Hey, man, I always like seeing Anthony Daniels. That's what I love about Anthony Daniels is he's down to play C-3PO no matter what. Ad for the library? Sure. He was running around. When we were at Star Wars Celebration, he was running around in costume. Old man Anthony Daniels was running around in a C-3PO costume without telling anybody just because he loved because... You know, he loved being C-3PO.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I like Anthony Daniels, and I think he's really great. I don't like C-3PO as a character. I've never liked C-3PO as a character.
You're not supposed to.
I didn't like him in the original trilogies. I didn't like him in the prequels. I didn't like him in Clone Wars, and I still don't like him now. I've never liked C-3PO.
He is the acknowledgement that no matter what universe that you're in or what storyline that you're in, there's always going to be ugh, that guy.
That guy.
And he's there. You just can't get rid of him. There he is.
But absolutely nothing against Anthony Daniels, who is lovely and just such a sweetheart. So.
And basically, George Lucas cemented it forever by saying, like, oh, yeah, the only common element that there would ever be between all Star Wars films are R2 and 3PO. So
yeah,
you're stuck with him.
Yeah.
Forever and ever.
I also noted that I like all the Rebels playing different people in the bit. I also said this is sort of like the beginning of the Doctor Who episode of Midnight, just a lot more fun and not as heartbreaking. Because they all get into a shuttle to go on a mission, too. And I was like, oh, it's like Midnight, only no one dies. And it doesn't hurt my feelings. I never really thought about it before, but there was a moment, like, when the droids were in the back, where, like, Chopper is, like, bumping against R2. And I thought, man, how fun would it have been to see R2 and Chopper go on a mission together?
Yeah, that would be fun.
That would be I would watch the hell out of that episode. And my only other note, even though she's acting a little spoiled and stuff here, I actually really like the character of Minister Tua a lot. She very much is the example of Imperial propaganda. She believes in it. She's raised in it. She's raised in these lies, and she honestly believes in it. And
she sees herself too in her, so she's a little biased because she's like, oh, that was me, you know?
Yeah. And so she's just incredibly trusting of Sabine, almost to the point where it's laughable. But it's just a note of that propaganda. Like, she doesn't even question it. She hears the word Imperial, and she's just like, oh, I trust you. We're in the same boat. Yay. And I really like the Kira Tuara, too. I think she's very interesting because, as we see as the season progresses, when things start getting... It's kind of like what we were talking about last week, like, the more you mess with higher ranked people, you realize the truth of what's going on. That's Tua's journey this season. So like right now she's like, I'm a minister and I'm helping people. And we know that she helped people. She used Imperial funding to make housing for poor people on Lothal. She actually truly thinks that she's helping people. But as we'll see later in the season, she'll get to the point where she's like, oh my God, I'm so in over my head. And that's what I like about Tua. I think she's a very fun, interesting character because right now she's just really thinks that she's helping, so.
Yeah, and she's also got her guard down because she's basically just on the bus, you know, or the shuttle bus between airports, you know. So yeah. It's filled with the rabble around her, and then she's talking to this girl that reminds her of her youth and stuff. It's a total grift. They play her psychology, you know, and they just, and not even by knowing her personally, by just being like, okay, she's a mid-level Imperial sort of bureaucrat type person, this, you know, this age and stuff, and they use that to get what they need, and it's just very well done.
Yeah.
In a nice little short amount of time. I mean, they even have a beginning section where they have a sort of mini space chase and introduction and stuff, so yeah.
Yeah, and I still also like, even though she like wants to help people, doesn't stop her from participating in arms deals.
Right, right.
Still an Imperial.
Right. Arms deal. Yeah, we'll get to that later, actually.
Yeah. But that's all I have for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready for Act 2.
All right, so Act 2. The shuttle lands on Garel, and Tua thanks Sabine for her help, and Sabine is like, oh, gee whiz, I love the Empire, thank you, Minister, thank you, and Zeb shoves her, which made me laugh. And as Tua and Mr. Webbo splash for the man who shaves his Webbos, meets up with the stormtroopers and heads for Bay 17, Sabine whispers to Ezra that he needs to go to Bay 7. And Ezra hops into a vent and is like, geez, Kanan, I thought you were going to teach me how to be a Jedi. And Kanan's like, crawling in vents is Jedi 101. It's in every TV show, movie, comic book, everything.
I mean, so God, it's like the first thing Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan did in episode 1 was get in the vents.
Like, God. Vents is Jedi 101. You're doing great, kid.
Like, the first thing you do in, like, Jedi kindergarten is you go to Yoda's class and he takes you to the, like, freaking vent room to practice.
Yeah. So I just kind of laughed at that when he was like, they're going to teach me how to be a Jedi, and he's inside of Vince. And I was just like, you're doing great. You're doing great, sweetie. And Ezra gets up to the roof and takes a few moments to prepare himself for his first real time at Jedi parkouring. And yeah, he like Jedi parkoured last episode, but he wasn't thinking about it. So now it's like important and he's actually thinking about how to do this. But he makes it roughly across the rooftops and gets to Hangar Bay 7 and opens the door for his friends while Kanan waves down Hera in the ghost. But they don't know that, but they have no idea what they're stealing, but it has to be something cool. And Zeb lifts the lid of a crate and stumbles back in horror. The weapons are ion disruptor rifles, which are illegal and banned by the Senate. And Sabine is like, dude, you can short circuit a ship with these things. But Zeb is still looking off in horror, and he mutters, that's not why they were banned. And Kanan says to get the guns on the ghost before the company arrived. And poor Tua, my poor trusting Minister Tua, she's standing in an empty Bay 17 going, where? But that the little girl, and she told me things would be here, and there's nothing here, and I don't understand. And C-3PO translates for Mr. Wabo that they're supposed to be in Bay 7, not 17. And 3PO is all smug of like, that's why you should have trusted me, a droid, and not some amateur. And Chopper is watching the Imperials and calls in that they're coming. And Hera tells Chop to stall them. And Chopper slams into R2 trying to pick a fight with him. But Tua recognizes the droid from the shuttle and gives the order for the stormtroopers to hurry to Bay 7. The Spectres are rushing to get the crates on the ships, but the stormtroopers show up to stop them. And Zeb smiles and he puts his hands up, casually strolling with an eat shit and die grin towards the stormtroopers. And buying them time, Zeb is like, what seems to be the problem here, Sugar Cube? We're just doing our jobs to move these things. And Mr. Webosplash is like, those are my disruptors. And Zeb is like, what? Disruptors? That can't be true. Those were banned by the Empire. And surely you wouldn't have banned items because you guys are the Empire and you're so nice. And Zeb breaks character and attacks. But Zeb is like in super beast mode at this moment. He's just ripping through stormtroopers left and right as Ezra gets the last of the crates on the ghost. It's in a crazy blast and shots. Through all the craziness, the blast and the shots and stuff, Chopper rolls by R2 and leads him and 3PO towards the ghost. With the droids and everyone else on board, Hera takes off towards space. Not knowing that R2-D2 is the real hero of Star Wars and 3PO is just there, Kanan wants the droids restrained and Ezra to keep an eye on them, because to Kanan, they're Imperial droids. We get a huge bit of information dump. Zeb wants the guns to be destroyed and not to go to a crime lord, Visago. And Sabine is like, well, these guns are just prototypes, and they're actually going to mass produce these guns on Lothal. And Kanan's like, see, Zeb, no guns for the Empire. This was great. But Zeb is super comfortable about all this, and he's just not quite acting like himself. And the entire time, R2-D2 is listening in. Meanwhile, Tua calls into Agent Callus to report the incident. She names off the Spectre's descriptions and mentions that she didn't think that there were any Lasats left. Callus puts on his evil bad guy smile and says there's only a few. Back on the ghost, Zeb is extra prickly and kicks Ezra out of their room. Ezra is pissed, but Space Mom calms him down and brings him into the cockpit. Hera explains that the disruptor rifles were used on Zeb's people, bringing them to the point of near extinction, and he lost all his people and his homeworld because of them. So Ezra decides to cut Zeb a little slack. Hera asks about how's their Jedi training's going, and Ezra mentions that Kanan's not done shit about it. And she pulls a space wife going, oh, don't worry, I'll talk to Kanan about it. And then arrival in Lothal. What'd you think of Act 2?
Well, you know how I was saying, oh yeah, Rebels is really fluffy in the beginning. Here we are in episode 2 and we're already talking about genocide in it. So wrong on that. I guess I just glossed over that in my mind. I only have two other real real notes on it. I would have had it be Hangar 8 and Hangar 18 just to have a reference to the old conspiracy UFO movie Hangar 18 about the UFOs kept at the government's secret installation.
Was it a George Lucas movie?
No, it was a low budget, like, fake. It was almost like a documentary, you know, or it was presented like a documentary, but it was this whole fictional story about UFOs and aliens being kept at a secret government base. But it would have just been a fun little reference to have them go to Hangar 18. Hmm. And this is just something that I don't understand from the Imperial point of view. Okay, when she figured out that Chopper was just there to distract them and slow them down and to double time there, wouldn't the first thing you'd want to do is, like, blast Chopper or grab him and take him into custody? Because he could have, he's part of whatever group is opposing you, he could have information on him. Or if you just leave him to sit there, exactly what he does is he goes, watch out, they're coming double time now, you know, because they know the gig is up. So it just was very tactically weird for her to just like, whatever. Oh, the droid's blocking us. Let's go and leave one of the enemy crew behind.
I would say probably one of two things for that. The first is, I don't get the feeling that Tula's very much of a army kind of person. I don't think that military tactics are her strong point. So it might just be something that she didn't think about. The other thing is, Chopper's one of the main characters. He can't capture.
Well, right. Well, yeah, but they could have had him, like, grab that droid and he got away or whatever, you know, and grab that droid, you know, or something like that. Because I'm not a military guy, and I picked up on it.
Yeah.
But that's all I really got for that part.
So for me, my first note is, we are so used from Clone Wars watching the Jedi parkour on everything and jumping off of mountains and buildings and stuff that I like that they gave Ezra a moment on the rooftops where he's, like, actively thinking about parkouring and he's never really thought about it before, because probably before it was probably just natural for him to jump from building to building, but he never thought about it. But now that he knows that about the Force and that it's in him, he's nervous about it and he almost messes up. I really actually like that he just doesn't just go and do it. He has to, like, kind of stumble through it. I like that.
Yeah, and I like that we've sort of taken a step back from the prequels with Jedi flying all over the place to where we have, you know, some people who only had limited training and experience. They're not quite as godlike in their powers as the Jedi were in the prequel trilogy. So it has a more naturalistic feel to it, I guess.
Yeah.
For lack of a better word.
I also like that Tua is gullible and got tricked by them, but she figures out almost immediately that she got tricked. So while she's trusting, it shows that she's not an idiot.
Right.
She recognizes Chopper right away. Once after the battles, though, and stuff like that, and they have 3PO and R2 on the ship, I like that they don't trust them, and they use their code names, and they put restraining bolts on them because they think that they're Imperial droids, and technically they are. I was reading that, because they're working for Bail Organa, and Bail Organa is part of the Senate, so technically, quote-unquote technically, he's an Imperial senator.
I don't think they actually even put the restraining bolts on him. I think they talk about doing it, but I don't think they ever get a chance to really even put the restraining bolts on him.
Yeah, I don't think so either, because, or else 3PO probably wouldn't have been able to fall.
Right.
But I do like that they have that moment of just like, these are Imperial droids, and I'm just like, you don't understand that they're heroes. I thought that was a nice moment.
Yeah, because, well, they're deep undercover. They're so deep undercover, 3PO doesn't even know it.
Yeah. And my only other note is, I just like how they built up the reveal of what these rifles did to Zeb's people. Because the moment that he took off the crate, he could have been like, oh, these things killed my people, ah! But they didn't. They showed us through Zeb's actions. Because,
well, his,
like,
face, he had this visceral look of disgust on his face when he realized what they were. It looked like he'd opened it up and it was full of, like, shredded bodies, which is probably what he saw when he opened it.
Yeah.
He opened it up and, like, you know, like you would think there was a monster in it. He like backed away from it, just like
Yeah.
Really nice.
And then like after that, it's just little things. Like when he's fighting those stormtroopers, like it's an extra level up. Mm-hmm. Like he is just ripping through them. And there's a moment where he's like talking to Kanan after they're on the ghost, and he's like, "Kanan, I don't really feel good about these rifles and stuff like that." Like he doesn't want to come right out and say like this happened to my people. Because I mean it's a very painful thing for him, so he doesn't actually vocalize it, but all his actions around them shows what it is. So it's very well done revealing what happened until we find out Hera what happened.
So, yeah,
it was very 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 good character work for Zeb. So
yep, and it's something I totally like didn't pick up on as much the first time through.
Yeah. But that's all I have for Act 2. The majority of my notes are in Act 3.
Yeah, Act 3 is where all the important stuff, especially for Hope, happens.
Yeah. Oh, my boyfriends. Boyfriends.
Boyfriends are fighting in this one.
They have their first fight as a future couple. I actually typed that and then I took it out. So, alright, Act 3. The Ghost crew lands at Visago's camp. Space wife is momming her space husband, but they have work to do. R2 has been chatting, and Sabine says that he has a real mission to make sure that the rifles had never reached the Empire. His master would pay mighty handsomely for the guns. And Zeb is like, "Can we please stop selling guns that destroy my home to dangerous, stupid people, please?" But Kanan has already set up this deal with Visago, so they're just gonna do it and ignore R2 and the real hero of Star Wars. Meanwhile, Callus intercepts a distress call from none other than the dumbass that is 3PO, trying to call into Governor Price for help because he's been kidnapped by brigands. And Callus calms him down, and 3PO sends him their location. Back at Visago's camp, they're wheeling and dealing with the rifles, and Zeb is more and more pissed off. But before they can settle a price, they hear a ship. And it's Callus's men, and Callus has brought some walkers with him this time. And Visago is out of there, taking half cargo, but he doesn't pay the rebels either. With no money, the rebels must make a stand against the Empire and not let the rifles fall back into their hands. R2 rolls out to make a suggestion to Sabine, and they're going to destroy the disruptors except for one, because Kanan takes up the disruptor and shoots down a walker with it, but the other walker shoots at him, and Hera circles around to help fight back. Callus and his men land, and 3PO is like, "Hooray, I'm saved!" But the Imperials do what any good character does. They shoot at 3PO and make him run away. And a battle is breaking out, and Chopper gets the ghost ready to take off. And Callus comes forward and points at Zeb and goes, "You, future boyfriend, face me!" And Callus pulls out a Lasat bow rifle. And Zeb is stunned for 2 seconds before absolute unfiltered anger fills him. And Callus and Zeb have their first fight. "Cause my ship." And Zeb says that only the honor guard of the Lasat can have that rifle. And Callus goes, "I know. I was there and helped destroy your people. I took this from a Lasat myself." And Callus smirks and goes, "Oh yeah, future boo, I gave the order to use the disruptors on your people." And Zeb is in a rage, but Callus is keeping his cool in the fight. During all this, Sabine has set the rifles to overload, and the rest of the crew pushes the crates out into the open, and they explode, taking out the second walker and some of the men. The explosion gives Callus an opportunity, and he shocks Zeb down to his knees. And before Callus can kill him, Ezra uses the Force for the first time to force push Callus and shove him away, knocking him out. Space Mom and Space Dad gather up all their space kids, R2 and 3PO, and get them on the ship, and they get the hell out of there. Safe on the ship, Zeb thanks Kanan for the Force save, but Kanan says that it was Ezra. And Zeb and Ezra have a cool bro nod, and they flip down their sunglasses, and they walk away from explosions. And finally, Kanan says that Ezra's formal Jedi training will start tomorrow. But Kanan has a very unsure look about that. Later on, the ghost docks on a familiar ship. It's Bail Organa's ship, to be exact. And Bail pays Kanan the return of his droids. And Bail is being cunning, being the cunningly sly man he is, drops a freaking Jedi Saiyan right in front of our Jedi Kanan, just because Bail can do that, and he sends Kanan on his way. Alone with R2, Bail kneels down Leia style, because he is Leia's baby daddy, and he wants to see what R2 got on these rebels. The end.
See, I like that ending. When I saw it the first time, I'm like, that's just kind of a tacked on bit of fan service, but it's not. It really has a lot going on in it. Like, R2 probably told him, this guy's probably a Jedi, and he was just like, wanted to see what his reaction was, and also whether it might sink in at first or not to communicate to Kanan, like, hey, you know, hey, brother. So it was really neat. I just came up with a new theory, too.
I actually have a note about that, so say your theory and I'll do my note.
Well, remember how last show in Clone Wars, you were a proponent of the Jar Jar Sith theory?
Yeah.
What about this? R2 and 3PO are like, R2 is like they're flip sides of a evil and good coin. R2 is the ultimate good, where 3PO is actually a Sith Lord robot. Because I just realized 3PO has a total Jedi power, which is whenever a whole shitload of people start shooting at him, he can just walk away with like the lasers just like going in between his arms and fingers and over his shoulder. You know, they don't even brush him, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe 3PO is a secret Sith robot, do it like trying to screw everything up. And meanwhile, R2 is like, R2, once again, here we have R2-D2 on his spy mission, observe these guys. And who knows actually whether his spy mission was partially to get the guns or partially to check on the rebels. Or both, a little of both. But he goes back to Bail Organa and goes, like, these guys are, you know, real good fodder for your rebellion that you're starting. So here we go with R2 forming the rebellion, the core, you know, getting General Syndulla involved. And basically, that's the key, you know, in the wide scale of the rebellion in getting General Syndulla into the first levels of the proto-rebellion. So, yeah, R2 is the hero of all Star Wars, and they keep playing it.
Couple things on your theory and everything. For your C-3PO theory, number one, you better find the Jar Jar music.
Oh, yeah. It's not the Jar Jar music anymore. It's the 3PO music. And lucky for you, 3PO doesn't pop up anymore after this. So I can't pound this theory home in this show anyway.
The next time, if you want to see a 3PO murder bot, there's one in the Dr. Aphra comics. His name is 000. And he is a protocol droid that looks just like 3PO, only he's trained in politeness and murder.
And torture and such, yes.
Torture and stuff, so... on this whole thing with R2, since I have a note similar to this, I just want to go ahead and get it out of the way. We were talking about how in Act 1, how when they came in as like the guest stars this week and stuff like that. I remember the first time I watched this episode, I thought it was very fluffy and fan servicey to have 3PO and R2 this early in the show. But now that I'm rewatching it again, it's not. As of the last few episodes that we've seen, the Rebels are just acting on their own and they're doing their own thing and they're just trying to help the people of the Fall. But the meeting with R2 and Bail is probably what gets Fulcrum in contact with them in the first place. Mm-hmm. And this is what puts them in the Rebel Alliance. So, like, now on a second watch, it's not fan service at all. It's just another piece of the story, and there's thought behind it and there's process to it, and it's not a fan service moment. It's actually part of the story.
Yeah, no, you're seeing how Bail Organa is looking for, when you're starting a rebellion like that, you gotta find the people, you know, that you can trust. And it's the people that walk up to you and say, I want to be part of your rebellion. How are you going to trust them? But these guys, he's watching them from, you know, not from afar, but he's watching them on the sly and seeing their actions and going like, okay, you know, I can be confident that these people are aligned with me. So it's a very practical and you know, it totally makes sense how they're going. It's not a forced bit of fan service. It's fan service-y just because, oh, you know, they could have had another droid doing it or whatever. But it's Star Wars, so it's got to be fun. And it's also fun to have R2-D2 being another, you know, providing another key piece in the puzzle that keeps everything together. You know, it's great.
And shortly after this is when we start getting our first mentions of Fulcrum. And who does Fulcrum work with? Bail Organa. He helped start the Fulcrum mm-hmm. program. And so I never noticed it before. I was like, oh my God, this is the moment right here, which is how Fulcrum gets involved in their lives, because it's only shortly after this where Sabine is going, who is this Fulcrum person and why are we talking to them suddenly? And Hera's like, nothing. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's not Ahsoka. So, but continue with your notes. I just wanted to tack onto yours.
I love the name of, Oh, 3PO. 3PO needs to know that space snitches get space stitches, man. Come on. He's got to learn that.
There's actually a moment, though, where, like, because the whole time 3PO has, like, been trying to contact the Empire, but he's one of the one that helps push the cart towards the Empire. And I'm like, did you suddenly realize you're in the middle of what R2's doing now?
Yes.
Suddenly?
Yeah, he was being very pragmatic at that point. He was like, okay, these guys are going to shoot me. I guess I'm sticking with R2, you know? Which is very logical, but it's very human, too. It's not very robot-like, but, yeah, it's C-3PO. But, it's just funny, the name Disruptors were Klingon weapons in Star Trek, which were also more brutal weapons than... But when they do fire the Disruptor at the Walker and it hits it, it looks like they threw a... It looks like they shot a bunch of Christmas lights at him. It's all like Christmas light colors when it hits it and it falls over. And I'm like, oh my God, we talk about the gruesomeness of Clone Wars, you know, the relative gruesomeness of Clone Wars. But then if you think about this episode, this supposedly less violent Rebels episode, and they talk about, you know, those will take down a ship, but you should see what they do to a human body. So then I'm thinking about, like, oh my God, Zeb saw all his people being, you know, probably just blown in, inside out with this thing
with Christmas lights
in a beautiful red, green, and blue, you know, explosion of Christmas lights, and that's horrific, you know.
I actually have a note about that. My note was because it's Kanan take out the Walker with like one disruptor, and it's really cool until you realize that Hera asked earlier if Ezra knew what those things could do to organics, and you realize what a fucking massacre just happened to Zeb's people.
Yeah, they were just being probably turned into pulp by that thing.
I thought fireworks. They reminded me of fireworks.
Yes, yeah. But yeah, they looked very festive, though, when they were getting
used.
They
did that, but then you're just like, just put a little thought there, and it's suddenly very gruesome.
And my only other note is we were also talking about, you know, Kallus and his arc and where that goes, and it's just like, oh my God, you know, not only is Kallus one of the guys who is like really who worked on the genocide of Zeb's people, but he did it with gusto. He did, you know, he was into it, and when he found out that there's like, you know, I mean, the natural human thing is like, okay, if like some people got wiped out and there's just a few of them left, you would want to grab them all and, you know, protect them or whatever. And he's just like, ooh, I get a chance to, you know, I thought I'd killed all of them. This is like bonus Lasat that I get to kill. And he's like really into it. And like, as much as Zeb takes it personally, which he should, Callus is also like, it's a very personal thing with the two of them. And then when they, and then, you know, it becomes even more personal now that they know each other. But it's just like, knowing Callus's arc, it's like, wow, man, it's tough to come back from genocide. Like, from not just genocide, but from, like, happy genocide, you know, like, yeah, enthusiastic genocide guy.
To... I almost put a note, because I have a note about their fight, too, and all that and stuff. How much do we want to talk about future stuff?
Yeah, I think we're maybe that's a bad habit we're starting right now.
Yeah, because, like, okay, let me say my note first, and then I'll talk about possible future notes. Because I love the fight with Callus and Zeb. Like, Callus is so cocky, and Zeb's just in complete pain and anger. And it's an actual fight, and they are going at it, and it's well done.
Zeb is in C-Red mode, yeah.
Yeah, and it's an intense fight, too. Like, you don't know who's going to come out of it. Though, man, after last week where Callus murdered a dude, and this week with the Lysaght backstory, they are laying it on super thick that Callus is a villain. And I'll be the first to say that I got fandom blinders on for Callus because I love him. I've always loved his character, and I love shipping him. But looking at the last two episodes, like, this early on, Callus is not a really good guy. That said, I almost added in another note in the future, and I don't know if I should talk about it now because I don't know if people are watching along with us. Do you think being with the show being done and this episode having come out, like, 2 or 3 years ago, it's okay to talk about?
I don't know. You know, I think maybe we should hang back on it and see what the listeners say. Because I don't know what the listener status is for the most part. You know, I don't know if there's a lot of people who are like, oh, I'm going to watch this along. You know, this is my opportunity to watch this along, or who have already watched it and are sort of where we are.
Then I will say, in this moment where Callus is very gusto about killing the Lysaght and the genocide, I just want to put a pin in it till we get to the honorable ones. It's a season episode where we get Callus's thoughts about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to stick a pin in that because I think that was a very reasonable explanation about why he was so gusto here. And now let me say, it's not reasonable ever for genocide. I just want to clarify that now. But at least it gives context of why, like, Callus was so calloused about it, and why it was a personal thing. So it doesn't make it okay, but at least gives an explanation that made me go, okay, I can see why he did this, and why he took part in it. And so pin until we get to the honorable ones. So
yeah, it's already getting heavier than I would have predicted.
Yeah. Did you have any other notes?
No, that's it for me.
All right, so for my notes that I haven't already read so far, I never noticed before, but when the specters, like, when Visago is, like, waiting for the specters, he wiggles his ears when he hears them coming. He wiggles them, like, they wiggle, and then he turns and looks at them. And I was like, oh, Visago, you're a little cutie. Like, your little ear wiggles.
They're almost like little radar dishes.
Yeah. So... For though, because he has horns, it took me half a second to realize it wasn't his horns wiggling. So, I will say one thing about Kanan. I was actually a little bit put off about his attitude in this episode towards Zeb. And because, like, I understand that they're desperate for money and they need to do this job, and he's being a leader for the entire team. But Kanan is super flippant and, like, lackadaisical towards Zeb's feelings. Because he could have just been like, look, Zeb, I understand what the rifle's doing for you, but we really need this job and we really need this money, and I'm sorry that this is how it goes. But the whole episode, Kanan's like, see, Zeb, it's fine. They're not in the Empire. They're going to arms dealers. It's going to be great. And that one moment felt very out of character for Kanan for me.
Well, I think psychologically it could go two ways with that. Like, because Kanan and Zeb have very similar experiences.
That's true.
Where
I never thought
their people are, all their people are gone. You know, they were witness to the wiping out of, you know, not Kanan's human people, but the Jedi family that he was a part of, you know, the way of life that he knew, they all got killed. So he could either, it could be like a PTSD sort of thing where he's just like, hey man, we got to be tough. I know I lost everybody. You lost everybody in a horrible way, but we got to do, you know, we got to be practical about this and toughen up or whatever. Or he could, yeah, or he could have been able to empathize with him and be just like, yeah, I know what you mean. And like symbolically, I know what this means. And also, if you think it through, you sell them to arms dealers and the Empire wants them. The arms dealers are going to sell them to the Empire because that's going to be the highest bidder.
Yeah.
You know, the Empire could pay any price for them. And that's where if it's not those dealers, it's going to be some dealers down the line. And all they need is one of these things to build more of them, you know. So, yeah. So you know, Zeb is totally right. You know, as long as those, if they take out those things, apparently nobody saved any kind of, you know, specs for them where they made them. So nobody knows how to make them unless they copy them. So if you get rid of them, that's it. Problem solved is as far as you're concerned. So. Yeah, Kanan was kind of being like a dick for story purposes, maybe.
Yeah, it just because like the only to go back to your first point of like maybe it's like a rationalizing PTSD moment. We know from A New Dawn that he was a drunkard and
right. He
just tried to bury that part of his past and not face it. So this could be one of those moments where he's like, if I empathize with Zeb, it's going to remind me of the Jedi. So yeah. I need to just keep pushing through and make it fine because I'm the leader.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's just I feel like it would have been a more better in-character moment if he was like, Zeb, I understand what you're feeling more than anybody else on the ship, but we need the money. So I just kind of wish they handled that differently. Oh, man. So something I never noticed was when Kallus gets the call from C-3PO, they said that 3PO was trying to call Governor Price. And I was just like, Aretha Price, my evil girl. And like, I just kept missing all these references to Governor Price because we know that she comes in later in season 3 and 4. And it just made me so happy because I know that like, she's not here. She's on Coruscant right now with mm-hmm. Tarkin and Thrawn of all people, yeah. You know, it's from the Thrawn level.
We're noticing just all the little breadcrumbs that we didn't notice before that they're dropping.
Yeah. I have another, all caps, C-3PO, another all caps.
But that's also that scene with C-3PO is also one of the great things. Okay. So like that's one of the undercover paradoxes that happens when like you have a C-3PO where you need him to be the translator but you can't let him in on the mission, which means that he's totally a danger to the mission because he could do something like this where he thinks he's doing the right thing. He's like, yeah. I'm going to save the day now by doing the exact wrong thing right now.
Yeah.
Although it was in the wide scheme of things, it was the right thing because that did get the weapons destroyed.
half of them. Visago did get half of them.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
So, speaking of Visago, my next note is Visago, a.k.a. new Hondo from Clone War.
Not as fun as Hondo, though.
Not as fun, but definitely has that Hondo feel of like, oh no, this is not how it goes and I'm not paying you, bye bitches.
Well, I like how he's just sort of like he just sort of hangs on and he's like, see you later, or maybe not. Yeah. I don't care.
My next note is I really like seeing Hera get to fight because so far in the show we've seen her only pilot, so I like seeing her with her little gun and like circling walkers and like dodging blasts and stuff. I like getting to see Hera in action in this because we've yet so far in the show got to see her do anything other than pilot.
She's just been behind the wheel most of the time.
Yeah. And my only other note, because we talked about all my other notes, on a second rewatch, after Kanan says that he'll start training Ezra in Jedi stuff, he spent a good chunk of the episode ignoring it. Like Ezra was like, when are you going to train me? And Kanan's like, don't worry about it. And then Hera asks, so have you started training? And Kane and Ezra's like, no. And she's like, I will talk to him about it for you, I swear. But after Kanan was like, yeah, I'll train you, I never noticed before how he looks like really unsure about it as soon as he says it. And we know in a few episodes that Kanan has doubts about being a master and training a Padawan. So it's really nice that they kind of added that in a few episodes early.
Yeah, because he's never been, he was a Padawan. He never has been properly trained and obviously not gotten to the point where he could train. So basically it's sort of the theme that I like about post prequels. You know, it's sort of like he's unsure of it, but really sort of in the way that the Force is going and things are going with the quote unquote Jedi and Force users, he's probably getting more into a superior method of training where it's not dogmatic.
It's more like pure Force and instincts.
This is what I've learned. This is what I've learned to do. And this is, you know, because he learned a lot of things the basic Jedi way from a kid. So it's probably like your rudiments, you know. Mm. You're like, this is pushing things. This is pulling things. This is, meditating. Basics. And not like probably the basics of the Jedi philosophy, but not to the point of where you got into like moral intricacies and stuff like that, and more, you know, nuanced parts of the philosophy and you know, dogmatic rules and stuff. So he's just
AKA,
like,
so pretty much he knows the basics of like what the is and stuff, and it's more of a pure form, and it doesn't have the Jedi bullshit we saw of Clone Wars.
Right, and it doesn't have a bureaucracy and a hierarchy attached. I mean, just the hierarchy is just a basic Master Padawan one-on-one hierarchy, and they're not in like a major city in the facility. They're out in the wilderness, basically, you know, and that's how Luke got trained by Yoda, you know, out in the wild with just like one-on-one master with no like Jedi council going like, so how's young Skywalker doing? You know, I don't like the blah, blah, blah. Just, you know, just a more pure, naturalistic sort of way of doing it. Unregulated. It's unregulated Jedi-ness.
You know, that makes me have a question then. Because I will say that Kanan is one of my favorite Jedi. I think how he Jedi's, which is now a verb. How he is a Jedi and stuff is, I think, a lot more pure, where he has that balance in the Force. You know, we know that he has attachments, and it's very similar to how like I see Rey and stuff. That said, Luke had that kind of in the beginning too, where he had just the very pure training out in the wilds, just like you said. But now we know from the Darth Vader comics that Jocasta Nu built a library, a secret library with all this Jedi stuff, with all the doctrines and stuff, as much as she could put in and remember, and Luke found it. So what if it was like those old Jedi teachings that he found, which is what made him have his downfall of his academy. He was like, oh, this is how I Jedi, and it still failed.
I'm going to, he started formalizing it once more, and look what happened. He got Kylo Ren. So, you know, it's like it's almost like the Force is resisting that sort of formalized, you know, hierarchical organization of it, and keeping it as just sort of, you know, these wildly talented people in the wild forced to sort of figure it out on their own until they find, you know, until the Force draws them to a mentor, instead of having this whole thing of where it's like, gather up all the Force children, take them away from their parents and bring them in and start processing them, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, I mean... Really, for all of what people talk about and gripe about Disney's Star Wars, I think they're missing the whole major thing that Disney is doing with they're like, Kathleen Kennedy is doing that. It's what they're really doing is changing the way we look at the Force, you know, compared to, since those were the more recent movies before the new ones, the prequels. But the prequels were about the change too. So, you know, the original trilogy was the beginning of that change in how the Force was, the cycles of Jedi and Sith and good and evil was starting to evolve and change, and it's continuing to do so in this, and I love it, and I love how they're subtly doing it in Rebels, and how they were doing it in Rogue One, you know, not so much in Solo, but it's just a general theme, and it's a little bit in the comics too. It's just a general theme that's keeping things interesting for me, especially.
I couldn't put it better myself. Yes. that's how I feel too. I think to me, like, Jedi like Kanan and Rey are the ones that are like starting to get the Force right. And I think Kanan is the one that does the best of it. Because he was never fully trained, so he never got into all the Jedi bullshit, and he just kind of had to do it on the fly and do it by force and by just sheer instinct, almost, of like, this is how you Jedi,
yeah,
and this is the basics of Jedi, and this is how I will train Ezra to Jedi, and I like that about it.
It's like a societal evolution. It's like when you go look back at the founding fathers of America and go, these are the people that came up with, you know, they came up with this new idea of how to run a country, and they had these, you know, revolutionary ideas about human rights and freedoms and stuff. But a lot of them still owned slaves and did a lot of sketchy things and stuff, you know. And it's the same with the Jedi. You know, the Jedi had the right idea, but, you know, the Jedi of that time period had those deadly flaws, and once that got wiped out, they still had the deadly flaws. You're still going to have the deadly flaws mixed into your humanity, or your being, you know, a sentient being, but without a sort of structure to set in those things. You know, it's just sort of like in the wild, you're going to either become like a Rey force for good, or you're going to become a Kylo Ren. And like, maybe the Jedi stopped a lot of Kylo Ren when they would grab force sensitive kids and train them to control themselves and not go over in the dark side. But maybe that wasn't such a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you wanted that, maybe because somebody was going to become a Sith anyway, so you didn't get rid of that aspect.
Yeah. But that's all I have for Act 3, so did you have anything else for the episode?
No.
You want to wrap this up yet?
Yes, I'm ready.
All right, take it away, Chris.
All right, I gave this, just like last week, a 9 out of 10. I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was, maybe I'm feeling generous because I underestimated it the first time I saw it, but I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the look and feel of it. And I'm not as much of a C-3PO hater as you, so it didn't get any dockings for 3PO. So, yeah.
I promise I didn't dock it purposely for 3PO.
Oh, well, there's nothing wrong with that. I wouldn't judge for that. I, you know, I'll dock for characters.
Yeah. For me, I liked last week a little bit better, so I scored it a little bit lower than last week. This episode is still, though, a lot better than what I remembered it the first time I watched it. And it's not the fan service romp that I actually once thought it was, and it actually serves a much bigger story. And 3PO still annoys me, but I think that the Zeb and Cal story really helped balance this episode, and I think they're doing a really good job handling that. And actually, what probably really docked it the most for me is I feel like Kanan was very out of character at a few points in this, but it's nothing that's too terribly bad, and I like this episode, and it's still not my favorite Rebels episode, but it's really good. And I got to see my precious baby girl, Minister Tua. So I gave it an 8 out of 10 for Zeb and Callus shipping.
They're starting out strong.
Yeah.
Hey, is that way in the background? Is that blind pug?
That's blind, deaf, demented pug that's barking.
I knew it. Yay.
Yep. Our poor little blind pug that has dementia.
Is yelling at the wall right now?
Probably. Probably, knowing her. Luckily, she hasn't been barking at 5 a.m., thank goodness, because there was definitely several days in a row where she just was like, I'm going to bark at 5 a.m., and I was like, oh, God.
Someday they'll make little dog translators, and all you'll hear all night is, God damn it, wall! God damn it, wall! Wall! Wall!
Wall!
Wall!
Wall! Wall! So, well, as always, we'd love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, and on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, especially on iTunes, because when you rate and review us on iTunes, it helps people find the show. And this week, our feedback actually comes from Twitter. So our friend Paul C. Kelly watched the Tarkovsky Clone Wars, well, at least the first half of it. He told me that he's going to be doing the second half of it this weekend. So he decided to add some commentary of his own to the first half of the Tarkovsky Clone Wars to go with our commentary. So take it away, Chris.
Take it away. Okay, so Paul, this is Paul just sitting around watching, just hanging out, watching the commentary. Oh, yeah.
Clones out, balls out.
Having some chips and some suds.
Web of splashy section, mother. Ooh.
Oh, hey. Just watch the first half hour of the miniseries. Oh, yeah. Anakin is almost like a crowler. He just lets all the men get killed, and he's kind of a bad general. LOL.
You know, I think I noted that, too. I was just like, man, the Jedi aren't even trying to help save the clones.
Yep. Oh, yeah. The clones were handled completely differently in this cartoon. They were just pieces to get knocked over. I think Padme just flirted with Yoda after he did the mind trick on Typho. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She does have that little smirky, like, my eyes are taking up half my face kind of flirty look.
Size matters not.
Okay, this is classic stuff, similar to Forces of Destiny. Oh, yeah. I think it's even more classic than Forces of Destiny.
Actually. You know, actually, though...
It holds together, I think, for me, better than Forces of Destiny.
It actually reminds more of the current series that's running, the Galaxy of Adventures. By the way, those are awesome. Like, I know they're just, like, recapping the movies, but the animation in Galaxy of Adventures is fucking awesome.
I'm sort of torn on them because they're nice little tidbits, but they're not, like, they don't add anything, but they're just nicely done little reimaginings of, you know, taking the sound from the movies.
The one about Palpatine's rise is my favorite. That one's just so
I don't know
good.
If I've seen that one yet. I have to go back and check out if I might not have seen that one.
And if we're being honest here, when they said that they were going to be doing an anime style for Resistance, Galaxy of Adventures is what I was imagining.
Yeah. Like Resistance is a couple drops in the punch bowl of, you know, like a couple drips in the punch bowl of anime, where these ones are flat out, you know. The only more anime Star Wars is that cartoon, if you've ever seen it. I imagine you've probably seen it. Have you ever seen the TIE Fighter pilots anime that this guy, I think he started it in film school, and...
I don't think I have, actually, no.
I'll see if I can find it and send it to you. It was just basically like, maybe like, it looked like a little trailer for like a, you know, an anime Star Wars show that would feature TIE Fighter pilots in the Empire, and very flashy. It would have been a very expensive show. It would have been like Akira level animation, but that super detailed. I'll find it for you and send it to you. You'll enjoy it. It's really nicely made.
Okay.
But so, you know, it was a student who made it, so it's a very short clip, and it obviously took years of work for this guy to do it, you know.
Well, this would be normally the time that we would have candy in our show, but we decided to record two episodes this week, so we still don't have candy. So Eventually, we will have candy from all over the world to review here. So, I guess, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That is our website. And it is on the interwebs, which are a series of tubes, if you haven't heard, that you can travel down to get podcasts. It's an entire infrastructure that started out being made by the U.S. military and now has become just a complete delivery method for podcasts and pornography.
This is either going to go the route of the second Wreck-It Ralph movie where Ralph breaks the internet and they're going through tubes, or this is going to be a joke about how Tumblr destroys itself with female presenting nipples.
That's the only drawback of that. I haven't seen the new Wreck-It Ralph movie, but I'm looking forward to seeing it. Because I really like the first one, but that's the only downfall of it, which of course they cannot cover the pornography. They cannot cover the largest aspect of the web in their parody, you know, satire movies.
Yeah.
Obviously. So, but yeah, what are you going to do? Yeah, www.twotruefreaks.com. That's where we release all our podcasts, and there's a ton of them. You can go and sign up for our RSS feeds, or you can find us on iTunes. We are also on Twitter, and our Twitter feed is not me. It is the legendary, the undefeated Gene, the podcasting machine.
Gene,
that was a very distracted one, but that's okay. Our last one was nearly perfect yesterday, so there you go, two sides of the coin. And we are also on Facebook. We have a Two True Freaks page on Facebook where you can see all our shows getting released, and then you can listen to them and go back and go on the comment thread and talk about whether you loved or hated the show or whatever you want to say about it or ask questions or comments.
And, yeah, speaking of asking questions, mm-hmm. Our Facebook place is a great place to leave questions for Yoda.
Yoda needs questions. We need a new question every week for Yoda. So I know you people have questions. You're listening to Two True Freaks podcasts. You have questions that you need to have answered, and Yoda may just be the guy to do it. And you can go on our show threads and ask Yoda a question, or you can go to, what is it, hope@twotruefreaks.com?
Yes, you can email me at hope@twotruefreaks.com.
And then we'll get your question also. There's also a Two True Freaks Cantina, which is a gathering place where we can just talk about anything. You're not just limited to our shows and our egos. You can go in and go like, I hated this movie. I love this movie. Are you going to go see this movie? This comic is a piece of garbage. Or whatever
That's
you want to say.
Too.
Yes, that is also on Facebook. Yeah, that's about it. Where can they find yous?
You can find me at JGuysAndJedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account, and you can also find me at HopeMolinax on Twitter. I also have a website called geekygirlexperience.com where I write stuff. I'm also a fan fiction writer on Archive of Our Own, where I write Thrawn fan fiction. My name on there is Chaos Lydia, and my story is called Forces of Gravity. I also beta read Valkyrie Strike by my friend Calypson, and it's also a Thrawn fan fiction. So you can check out the two of those on AO3, which is short for Archive of Our Own. Woo! Actually, next week is one of my favorite episodes.
I totally have no idea what next week's episode is. I'm kind of enjoying using the streaming service to watch it and just like, because I'm not used to those, but like it's like, oh, it lines them all up. So next time I go there, it's just like, hey, you want to watch the third episode of Rebels? And then I say, you know, I kind of have to. Yes, I do. I like it. It's very convenient.
Yeah, next week is Fight or Flight, which is another one of my favorite, just because I really like them, and I like it. So it's one of my faves. So, and we get to see something that I don't think we've ever saw before in Star Wars, a TIE fighter flying sideways.
Oh, that's right. I semi-remember that.
I remember the fandom just being like, TIE fighters can't fly sideways. And I'm like, why not?
Because I'm a space electrical engineer, and I say so.
You'll be so proud of me, Chris. I was listening to a podcast, and they said sucked out into space, and I corrected blown out into space.
Yes.
Proud of me.
When you said corrected, you mean you yelled at the speaker, or did you actually write them a message?
My friends on the podcast, so I was like, I just want you to know that every time you say sucked out of space, I hear my co-podcaster yelling at me. And he's not even listening. So, all right, you guys, see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.